Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Are you PNLP? This is the Premier Non-League Podcast.
Right, we're back for episode 2 of our summer specials. Gareth, an eventful interview, shall we say, with Mark White. He's put my editing skills to the test, I have to say, with that one.
Let's just hope our guest tonight has got better Wi-Fi than Mark has.
So. Well, I mean, it links quite nicely with Mark, doesn't it? Because he's probably used to editing this guy quite a lot, and I'm sure he keeps him busy on the cutting floor. But we're joined by Rich Phippen, who is actually the producer, creator of A Bunch of Amateurs. Rich, good evening. How are we doing?
Oh, lovely to see you both. Yes, very well. Thank you.
Yeah, it's so nice to see the face behind the voice that we hear so nicely. Yeah. Bunch of Amateurs every week. So how's the summer been? Have you had a break? Have you been chilled, or like what's been going on?
No break really. We finished filming, third week of May, and I was 3 or 4 games behind on the show, so I had to keep editing. It meant having a few Saturdays off, admittedly, but kept producing the episodes, and obviously the finale went out a week ago, but I've now got to do, we're putting everything else onto Patreon for the summer, so I've got a load of standalone episodes and mini-series to do over the next couple of months, so started working on them now. I mean, they're a little bit easier to edit than Dorking because we shoot so much at Dorking that when I'm doing Charlwood stuff, which is, you know, where I started, they tend to be easier episodes to make. But no, in terms of time off, almost none. It just means a couple of Saturdays where I've had a bit of a relaxing afternoon, but I'm still editing pretty much every day.
Yeah. So no rest for the wicked then, as they say.
Sadly.
No. So your background with football, let's just start right from the beginning. So as we've been saying off air, and we hear occasionally with the non-league former addicts, we know you're a Charlton fan, you grew up a Charlton fan. But what's your sort of background with non-league? What got you involved, and you know, what got you to sort of, you must have had some sort of love for the game to end up doing such a fantastic series on it.
I guess it goes back to when I first got a digital camera. Digital video camera back in, I want to say 2004. And I was supposed to be playing Sunday League with my mates. We put a new team together and I broke my foot and couldn't play. And because I just got this camera, I took it down and I walked down to the park to watch the boys play and I filmed some of it. And I worked at Sky at the time. They just gave me a laptop with editing software on it. So I learned to edit, making these little kind of end of match closes that Sky Sports would do. And I did that for a while, every now and then, and we did an end of season compilation, and I did that over a couple of years messing around with it, and started to shoot a documentary back then, but I was too kind of young and stupid to really figure out what a documentary would entail, what would make it interesting, how to tell a story. I didn't have any of those skills. I just had a camera and an idea. And the idea just went away. And after I left Sky, which was many years later, so that was about 2017, I had a camera and an idea again, but this was a much better camera. So I said to a mate of mine, are you still down Charlwood? Are you still doing stuff down there? And he said, no, but I know a guy, the guy that's running it, Barks, is mad keen to do something. So if you want to go and meet him, I think he's going to say yes. And I met Barks and it was like, this guy needs to be on film. Like, he's a really interesting manager. You know, we hit it off straight away and he loved the idea of doing a documentary around his team. But up to that point, I hadn't really spent any time around non-league, not seriously. I've been to a few local games and stuff over the years, but nothing, I didn't have any real interest in it or any real knowledge about any of it. And it was a journey of discovery, really. Right. I mean, I was filming with Barks for a few months before we even started doing anything. Yeah. And I was really learning how the matches worked, who did what, and exactly how lo-fi a lot of it was.
So are you one of the guys at Sky Sports used to those really emotionally sort of charged end of sort of Super Sunday packages? Is that what it was, that sort of?
Originally, I used to choose the music for them. So okay. I worked with the producers to choose the tracks. But yeah. No, I went on to work in Sky Movies. So I wasn't responsible for them, but I was inspired by them.
So hopefully you didn't see me make a tit of myself on Soccer AM doing a catwalk with the Soccerette back in 2007, I think it was.
I would have seen that.
Yeah, you might have seen the Larry Charlton fans. That's something that's staying well and truly locked in my CD drawer because that ain't coming out anytime soon.
I looked hard enough on YouTube, I'd find it.
I think it was out there somewhere because someone shared it to me, but I didn't really care anymore. I've got it on DVD here, so maybe one time I'll let you watch it, Gaz, if you're nice to me.
Proud of it.
If you're nice to me. So we started off at Charlwood with Barks and... You know, the first series that we saw was fantastic. I mean, it was that real sort of, because you've seen it, all the flash cameras and everything on Amazon, you know, you've seen the TV shows where they go in the changing rooms, but to see it at such a grassroots level, there must have been quite a buzz because for you just getting that access, it must have been an amazing opportunity for you.
Yeah, I loved the contrast between kind of the lowest budget level of football and 4K cameras and having multiple cameras. I love the idea of taking non-league football and, you know, I know Dorking on amateur. So I love the idea of taking cameras to amateur football and treating it with a lot more respect than you might see elsewhere. Most people shoot any amateur football with an iPhone and they can't zoom in and there's no framing. It's just people waving a camera around. Occasionally you'll see a good goal on Twitter or something. But I noticed... You know, Palmer's did a fantastic job of giving you that Sunday League experience, but no one was sort of really doing any storytelling of behind the scenes and connecting that to what was going on in the match. And that's what really excited me was the idea of, it took a while to learn how to do that actually. When I first started, me and Barks were going to make a film. We wanted to make a 2-hour documentary and I didn't know how to structure that at all. So we were just shooting and shooting. And then I met Mark as well. And so I thought I'll make him the B storyline. Have Barks as the A storyline. And so we just shot a lot with those guys until COVID came along. And at that point, Barks said to me, look, why don't you turn some of this footage into episodes? And then you can play it to the team during lockdown and give them something to look forward to every Saturday. So we started doing that and it worked. And then after a while, Barks was like, I mean, he's the ideas man. He was like, put it onto YouTube. I was a bit reluctant. Then did that next. And then that started to work. Then Barks put it onto TikTok and did it. And that's when we went through the roof, I think.
Yeah, I think I've watched bits of Charlwood up until last season. I'd obviously seen bits and pieces of Charlwood. How long from leaving Sky to a bunch of amateurs starting? How long was that sort of... How much footage did you get to be able to go into a bunch of amateurs and really start off?
When I left Sky, it was relatively sudden and I took redundancy and didn't know what I was going to do with my life at all. And I'd split up with my long-term girlfriend at pretty much the same time and we had to sell our house and stuff. So it was a big period of upheaval for me and it was hard to get because I had such a specific job at Sky. It was hard to find. There's only like 3 or 4 jobs in the country that doing what I was doing, so getting back into it was incredibly difficult. So I was doing corporate work, and it's during one of my corporate jobs I was chatting to a videographer and telling him about the idea of shooting some non-league stuff, and he gave me some great advice, and that was the end of 2018. So I then met Barks in January 2019, and we shot for a year and 3 months, I think it was, before COVID landed, something like that, year and 2 months. So we had 14 months worth of footage and no idea what to do with it. So we had a lot.
Keep you busy. I mean, I've watched a bunch of amateurs for a long time. I got into it during lockdown, I think helped with the missing of football and that sort of thing. And then this season started off, obviously, with like Holland Sports and then didn't go very well. and then we'll get on to that in a bit. I want to ask a few questions. Sure. And then obviously Dorking over the last few years have had a tough time, a little bit like us guys down in Worthing. It's been very much start, stop, and then this season. There was such a great story to tell, I think.
Yeah, we got incredibly frustrated by what was going on with Dorking. I hadn't done, when I first got with them, I was on the periphery. I was pointing a camera. Mark was great. He was like, just do what you want to do. Let me know when you're coming down, whatever. So whenever I sent him an email, I said, I want to come down to that game. He said, yeah, fine, whatever. And it let me in. It'd just be me with the camera roaming around, getting bits here and there. But it wasn't until like lockdown two or three, whatever it was, towards the end of 2020, I guess, when Barks's season got curtailed before Christmas. And I'd started doing the episodes and putting onto YouTube. We had a few hundred viewers. And I said to Mark, look, I can't do this to Child anymore. Do you want to come and do it with you? And he was, nah, fine. His attitude with this stuff is always, nah, fine, whatever you want, just let me know. And it's not just me. He does that with a lot of people. He understands publicity. He knows that there's no point saying no to people, give them an opportunity. So I had to put a microphone on him for the first time. And he was a little bit like, what the fuck? Can I swear on this podcast?
That's fine. We had Mark on the other day, mate. Do you think he got away with not swearing? We didn't ask him not to, but
I'll try not to. That's all right. But when I'm quoting Mark,
it's real.
It's hard not to, yeah. You know, he was a little bit taken aback with the microphone, but unbelievably trusted me with it straight away. And, you know, I'm recording hours of him talking, and you can imagine what that's like. So, that was when we really got going with Dorking, because I didn't have the opportunity to shoot Child anymore. And Dorking's season kept going when the lower leagues were stopping.
Yeah, of course.
What did you feel like personally? Like, we asked Mark, obviously, we all know that, you know, I feel that it was forgetting that there's that virus going around, that nasty, horrible virus that we've all been lived and dealt with the last couple of years. But did you think at one stage, obviously being around a dorky thing, did you personally feel aggrieved by the whole situation, forgetting that, you know, you're doing a bunch of amateurs, but what were your own personal feelings about the null and voids and the sort of curtailments and all that?
Mark's a very convincing man, so it was hard to disagree with him. I didn't have a vested interest, is that the phrase,
in Dorking
at the time, beyond what I wanted them to do for me in terms of storyline. My heart wasn't in it in the way it was with Charlton, for instance. Charlwood, I'd come around, particularly after the one gas game. I think that was the first time I celebrated a Charlwood goal, you know, maniacally. That was the one where there was all kinds of hair pulling and spitting and stuff. And I'd realized, that was the point I realized that it doesn't matter what the stakes are. If you care enough about a game of football, then you will get the joy back. So it doesn't matter what level that's at. That's when I really realized it with Charlwood. And I hadn't really got that with Dorking when their season was curtailed. So I first started with them when they had their season curtailed and they went into the playoffs, and I shot a little bit of the playoffs, but not much. But then when the season was properly curtailed, I was just thinking, how am I going to turn this into a story? That was all I was really caring about. How do we make an interesting story? And honestly, that gave me a really good opportunity to tell stuff that wasn't necessarily just the match. You know, I got to go to a couple of meetings. I managed to get down to the players' meeting when he was telling the players that the season was being cancelled. So that, for me, gave me some interesting stuff. If it had been curtailed as they were going into the playoffs this season, I'd have been heartbroken. Like, you know, this last year, they've really sucked me in. And, you know, as Mark says, you're a wanderer now. So,
but it's true, because we said to Mark on Monday, didn't we, Gareth, saying, like, don't get me wrong, my boyhood club's Charlton Athletic. I'm from South London, you know, through thick and thin. I've still supported them through very thick as now, as you know, talking about that curtailment with a lovely player called Lyle Taylor, which I can't really mention when Pete was, if Pete would be there tonight, because I think he's the reason we still go down. But I digress on that. But Worthing for me is the club, it's where I live, and, you know, Gareth as well, he's been sort of Worthing since a kid, really, haven't you? And but I still feel very drawn into Dorking. And I think it's because of your editing and the programme. You know, it's one of those, for me, it takes a lot for me to have a must-see TV show or like series. And I literally can't wait for every week to come on. I know Gaz says the same as well. Like every time you see that notification come up saying, oh, there's a new episode, I'm like buzzing, because especially that I travel the world for my job and I can't watch a lot of things on my Sky Planner. But when Bunch of Amateurs is released, I can put it in my hotel room, I can watch it on my device. So it's one of the only things that I watch week in, week out. So you feel it's hard not to be drawn into it, especially when you've got a character like Mark, because as we said, he's Marmite to a lot of people. You get to know that bloke, he's a top guy, and it really makes you feel that love for non-league.
Yeah, he does. And I can't take the credit for that. I think we've had a perfect storm, really. You know, an interesting club that's that looks good on film. You know, they're in a nice area, and when you put the drone in the air, everything around it looks lovely. And you know, the fact that he's the manager and the owner gives him so much autonomy. He's credit, because he's built a squad of really nice people that are not a traditional dressing room in the sense that they're not like the crazy gang. You don't get any kind of hijinks in there. And I find that really interesting. And it's making it harder, but in a more interesting way, to kind of get under the skin of that dressing room. And that's the plan for next season, is to show a lot more of the players, because they were fairly guarded, you know, for the first year or so. But no, to your point, I it blows my mind that someone says they look forward to watching it. You know, if it was a friend of mine saying that, that would blow my mind. When people I've not met before are saying that to me, it's like, never thought that would happen. You know, it's not what we set out to do. And I still don't really understand how it's happened, to be honest.
You've got 50,000 subscribers. Like, it's no mean feat. And I think that's, take Mark and Dorkin out of it, I think it's testament to you, because actually the commentary is what makes it for me. Like, some of your commentary.
Yeah, you're such a dry sense of humour.
1 o'clock in the morning and I've had enough, but I'm going to finish this. And then you come back to it. It's the honesty. And do you know what? That for me is what makes it. Like, I watch the beginning, I watch the end, the interviews, and then like the middle bit is the bit that I sort of really pay attention to, because some of your witty, sarcastic humour really comes across in that. And take Mark out of it, I think what you've built in Bunch of Amateurs is actually a testament to you, not Dorkin and Charwood. I think really what you've done, you've been allowed to use your own sort of freestyle to get where you are, if that makes sense.
I don't know how I get away with it, to be honest. That was definitely not part of the plan. The narration thing, you know, when I watch documentaries, I like, same with films, you know, I'm a film student, and I've always really liked films that show, don't tell, you know. So I remember doing a presentation at work once about how much I love Whiplash rather than The Martian, because in Whiplash, you're given minimal information to figure out what's going on. In The Martian, you've got Matt Damon literally looking at the camera and telling you what's going on. Yeah. And I was always far more in the Whiplash camp. So when we started doing the weekly episodes and Barks was like, you're going to have to narrate it or get someone to narrate it, I was like, oh my God, like, this isn't what I want to do, but there's no way we can tell this story without narration. I haven't got enough quality footage, and we didn't shoot it with the idea of doing a weekly thing. So there isn't enough in terms of talking heads to tell the story. So I started doing the narration. Funny enough, I don't like watching the other documentaries too much, because they drive me mad with the budgets they've got and the things that I would love to do when I see All or Nothing. And I think the things that I'd do if you gave me that budget, you know, we're doing this on a shoestring. Like, I invested in some equipment, but beyond that, we don't have any budget. So
what are the things you'd love to do then if you had the budget of All or Nothing?
Just have more fun with it, get in with the players more, get in the under the skin of the manager. But you know, you look at the Spurs one, and Daniel Levy's fingerprints are all over that. You know, they barely mentioned the departure of Pochettino, and they skipped the first section of the season to get into the Mourinho stuff. And yeah, I was just thinking, no, the real drama there is what happened to Pochettino and that big defeat that they had. And you know, and they've skipped all of that because I assume that Levy's got final cut on it. Whereas when you've got someone like Mark, who is his manager and chairman, you don't have that chairman overseeing it and deciding what you can and can't say in the same way.
Well, I noticed that at the end of the last episode, Rich, you said that it's when the assistant manager was screaming. Was it a penultimate episode? And you said Mark asked us to blank the audio from that. Does he have any sort? I know. Yeah. Does he have any sort of creative control over it, or is it kind of a handshake gesture? You say like, okay, he said please don't put that in, and you're like, yeah, that's fine, I won't, sort of thing like that.
Yeah, the deal with every manager that I shoot, and this applies to all of them. So Barks initially, where that's how we kind of started it off. We figured out this process. And then Mark, and more recently Payne, who's now in charge at Charlwood. The plan is once I've done version one, which will be quite long, I will send that to the manager and they get to go through it and say, these are the things that I don't like. And then I will judge them on whether that's a fair point or whether I think that's important to keep. I have final cut, but at the same time, it's no good to me if I'm upsetting these people or if I'm betraying any confidence. So Mark will take out stuff where if he's moaned about a player or if he said something about an opposition team, he was very adamant that he didn't want the opposition teams during the run-in to know that he was mentioning them in the team talks. He didn't want them to be like, oh, we're in your heads kind of thing. So we took a lot of that stuff out. And I get it. He'll justify it. And I'll be like, yep, fair enough. But there'll be times when he'll try and take something out. And I'm like, mate, that is too important to the story. And that's staying and he's fine with that. But it's, you know, so it's just important to have a really positive relationship with the managers, I think, because then it doesn't become any kind of argument or row. I think there's one thing that I really wanted to keep that Mark took out. Can't remember what it was. That was quite a while ago. And that's the only time when I've been tempted to just put it in anyway. But you know, the risk of ruining a relationship or just having a rocky time for a few weeks or losing any trust, it's not worth it. Like, we've got so much good content out of those guys that, you know, I don't need, that's the ultimate thing. I don't need to keep that in. Funny enough, for the playoff final one, there was a clip of me doing something that was pretty funny. And
did it maybe involve a ball and the side of the pitch? It might have been in a certain preview.
Yeah, you can see it in the trailer. Yeah. But Mark said to me, you know, bearing in mind we're going up a level and we don't know exactly how that's going to go for us. This might be wise to take out, you know, but it's your call, I trust you. But it's, you know, if it were me, I would take that out. And I just listened to him and thought, do you know what, for the sake of one laugh, like, it's not worth it, you know. So we took it out. We did put it in for the cinema premiere that we did, and it got a big laugh, so that was enough for me.
Brilliant. No, I do like that. So let's just say, let's talk about a match day. What is a match day for you? What's the setup like, from, you know, from us, just tell the outsider that doesn't see the behind the scenes, what is the sort of setup for you, Bunch Ratchet? Obviously you got yourself a camera. How many staff do you have doing it, helping out, and what time do you get down there, and what's the sort of setup procedure like?
So I'll take you through the playoff final day. We had more of us than usual that day, I think, which is four of us. It's usually two or three of us. Playoff final day, my fiance Claire learned to point a camera so that she could help me. One of my best mates, Greg. So a few years ago, I trained up three friends on the cameras, and they helped for a while, but two of them kind of fell away. But Greg really took it seriously and started learning in his spare time. So Greg's kind of my number one guy now. And there's a guy called Jack who contacted me and just said he wants a change in career and he'll do anything I ask. And I'm like, right, well, you're in. He's smart.
I was going to say, that's a little bit dangerous, that. And I hope you've taken full advantage of that, Rich.
Absolutely. But he's got no regrets, so it seems to be going well. On match day of the playoff final day, get up, Claire makes breakfast, we eat well. We drive down to Dorking. We meet Greg there. We meet Jack there. Actually, no, we pick Greg up, I think. Get to the ground. Those guys then set up the three main cameras. So the DSLR cameras with a variety of lenses and tripods. While they're doing that, I'll take the bag of GoPros in and I'll put two GoPros in the dressing room. And then I'll put the GoPros behind the goals. Just so that they're ready and done. But while I'm doing that, I take the gimbal, the Ronin, with me, which you can just see there.
there you go, yeah.
That's my handy cam. So I keep that on me because I get this real antsy feeling if I can see something that I can imagine being on my computer screen and I'm not filming it. So I'll grab that and just start pointing it. And you see people walking around, that's a nice shot. Or Mark will come in early and be like, I've got to get Mark. So, you know, I've got to show him turning up or whatever. So I always have that camera with me.
Yeah.
And then once they're done, the guys set about getting establishing shots. They just film people arriving. And then I'll go and put microphones. I've got four microphones that I put on the staff, just so that from that point on, Greg and Claire or Jack can film from a distance and they don't know what they're saying. We've got no idea what's going on. It could be Mark telling a story that we're not allowed to share, yeah, or it could be him talking about tactics. But if we're filming from a distance, I just say to the guys, just keep filming him. Just follow him around. Follow anyone that's got a microphone. If they're doing something interesting, just keep following them. And so then it's team talk one, and I sneak in under the GoPro, so it's above my head, and I film Mark, and then I film the players' reactions and Mark, yeah, and the reactions. We've got two GoPros as the coverage.
So you're sitting on the bench, like with the players pretty much to the side?
No, I want to. Yeah. And there's a corner that I desperately want to have, which I used to have at Charlwood, but it's Bobby Joe Taylor's favourite spot. So for next season, my negotiations with Mark, I haven't actually put it in. I want to put it in there, but I get Bobby Joe's seat because it's out of the way of the cameras, and I can get some great shots down the line of the bench. So you can get the multiple faces in and out of focus. I'm desperate to sit there, but I can't. That's about a 30 minute team talk usually. And we have to edit that down to about 4 minutes eventually.
Wow.
And then after that, we interview Mark on the pitch, and then I walk around the whole ground, and I've got a spare microphone that I can clip onto people, and I can just ask them, supporters for quick interviews. They generally don't know who I am or what I'm doing, and they'll just be a bit bemused by the whole thing. And then occasionally you get someone that's seen the show and they're really forthcoming. But, you know, that's taken, you know, 10, 20. When I said I wanted to do a documentary before, I never would have had the guts to walk up to a stranger and say, give me 5 minutes. But now it's like, I need this. I know I need this. So I don't really care. I'm just going to go and stick my camera in someone's face. And yeah, I've heard it all before. Oh, you think you're Des Lynam, do you? Whatever things people say to me.
Pete had been on the line tonight, he thinks he's Jeff Stelling, mate. So, you know, it's all right. He thinks he's Jeff Stelling. That's his own saying. when Jeff said he was announcing his retirement, he was saying, oh, I'm going to go through it. I was like, okay, Pete, there we go. But anyway, I digress. Yeah, no, I think that one thing that I really like, and I know Gaz said it as well, is that the fact you do involve the away team quite a lot. You know, I do like you when you go into that sort of beer area. I've been down to Meadowbank and that sort of fan zone behind the goal where you got the people behind the stand when they're drinking. And I do really like seeing that because, you know, it's nice to see people's views on non-league from other sort of areas, because it's completely different clubs. You've got clubs down the bottom of the division and clubs at the top. They think they're going to come and be thrashed by Dorking, but actually they end up providing a result. What team was it? I can't remember what team it was last season that thought, was it Chippenham that Dorking lost at home to in the running? And it was quite, I can't remember what one it was. Oh,
there was a draw.
Yeah, there was one team that came, they thought, oh, we're going to get thrashed, and they actually ended up getting a result out of it.
Yeah, I remember the game. I think it might have been Chippenham.
I think it was.
They went 2-0. Dulwich went 2-0 up as well, didn't they? And then that was an absolute, barnstormer of an episode, that one. I'll be honest with you. It's been well known that I've been trying to get to Dorking all season. Every time I arrange to go, there's something comes up, which means I can't go. I'm hoping to go on Saturday for the pre-season game.
Something will come up again for you, won't it?
I'm hoping not, but yeah, semi-final, final, and some of the running games, I was desperate to try and get down there, and yeah, it didn't go very well.
We have to say that, just before moving on, we have to say, I do appreciate, Rich, inadvertently you filming Pete, who should have been on the line tonight, wearing a Premier Non-League podcast T-shirt in the background of the final. So thank you for the free publicity. Really? I appreciate that, yeah. Yeah, it's I'll send you a little picture. I took a screenshot of it on the thing, but it's quite, you can't massively make it out, but we all saw it and we're like, yeah, there we go. He's like, he's wearing our football shirt in the back. He said he was going to wear it down there to the game. So Pete's doing us proud, and apparently he featured quite prominently in your preview video as well. So it's quite, so thank you for that publicity. Not that anyone would have had a clue what it was, but you know, we'll take it at that anyway.
Do what I can for cross promotion.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Right, Rich, so you told us how the match day set up is. You ran through the final. Like, what's the editing process like? How long does that actually take, man hours and stuff? Because it sounds like with all those cameras, sound bars, everything like that, I mean, I can let alone edit a stupid video taking the mick out of Bognor when we beat them at their ground on Boxing Day or something like that, let alone get with about four different mics, four different cameras.
Yeah, it's so on the final, it was six microphones and five camera angles, I think. Six camera angles. So, I mean, it's all about the syncing. I break the day up into parts and then sync up the angles and the audio. And by the end of day one of editing, so it'll be like a 9-hour day, I'll have the entire day in a linear timeline. The teams talks, the interviews, the match itself, they'll all be there in their entirety, and the timeline will be hours long. And then I just go through the team talks, cut them down, take bits out, cut them down, get them as small as I can. And I do that with the interviews. And once that's all done, I'll then go through the match, but that'll be in probably the next day. So we're on day three now. I'll go through and do the match. And so by the end of that, I'll have the first edit, which will be an hour and a half, 2 hours long. And then send that to Mark or Barks or whoever it is, get them to say what they don't like, because that could affect the storytelling. If there's something they really don't want to talk about on screen, I might have set that up to be paid off later on in the story. So I need to know early on if that's a no-go. It doesn't happen very often, if ever, actually, that it affects the story. But there'll be time. Or sometimes Mark will be like, you've missed the trick there, because what you don't realize is that this happened and that's why that happened. And I'll be like, oh shit. So I'll go back through and be like, and try and find the bit that I've taken out, that, or I'll make sure I write in the script. So when I go through on the next pass, what I'll do is I'll start writing the script as I go, and I'll just start narrating it. And so I'll write a line, two or three lines, and then chop bits out if they're superfluous, and then record the line, then move on to the next section. So the game breaks down into lots, hundreds of little sections that hopefully some of them will link up with sections later on in the match. And then go through it all again and do that. And then the fourth pass will be sorting the audio out and doing the intro section. And so it takes about 4 days. If I work solidly and I'm focused, 3 to 4 days. I have done an episode in 2.5 days once. I still don't fully understand how. I wish I.
That's funny. The clip that Gaz said, it's like 1 a.m. in the morning now, and I really can't give a shit, but I'm still going to finish it or something like that.
Yeah.
It's probably one of those ones.
I've adjusted it. I've adjusted the timing so that I start the commentary in the morning now, so that I can have that done by mid afternoon. Otherwise, as you say, I'll end up there 1 a.m. and I'll be fed up with it.
Yeah. No, it's one of those. So, one of the most famous problems you had this season was access at Southend United, as we all know, because famously you got your debut Dorking. I say it wasn't a debut, but you've been named as a Dorking player just so Mark could get you access to the pitch. And from speaking to Mark on our last episode, we also know that they were still trying to kick you out, despite the fact Mark was like, he's a bloody player, he's registered as a player. How did that come about? And also, have you had any other sort of problems at grounds, away grounds accesses? Because I like to hope it wasn't a problem, but I'm very disappointed you didn't film the trophy match at Worthing, because I was looking forward to seeing Worthing versus Dorking in the FA Trophy, but I was so disappointed when it wasn't there.
I think I was probably doing Holland Sports at that point. I was having to pick games and alternate between the two. So,
do you promise if we play you next season, you can promise you'll do a Worthing one for us? Just for us. Yeah. Thank you, mate. Thank you.
I like it down in Worthing. Me and Claire will... If we're going down towards the coast, then we'll get a hotel down there. So more than happy to do that. Southend, I mean, you can see in the Oxford episode, the moment that Mark has that idea, on the coach. He gets very excited about it.
Yeah, he was getting excited. He's like a kid at Christmas, weren't he?
Yeah, he loves coming up with crazy schemes, I think. And it's the only time I don't get nervous anymore. And it was the only time I've been genuinely nervous, because we were being a bit cheeky, and because Southend are a big club relative to what I'm used to doing. And I wasn't sure how it was going to go down. And, you know, they gave us the access. We got into the dressing room. It wasn't even really about being a player. They just kind of let me in, which they said they weren't going to, but I went in anyway. The other guys, Claire and Greg, were on the other side of the pitch. So they were left alone and fine, because that stand was empty. But I needed to shoot the bench. And I started off filming with my iPhone, just sneakily. And then Samuel Abb said, just pick your camera up. And they were just kind of bullying me into getting the camera. So I'm like, all right, lads. And I picked the camera, just pointing at the back of Mark's head, basically. So I was doing that for a while. And then, yeah, we came out after half time and they took me aside and told me in no uncertain terms they wanted me to leave the stadium. And I said, look, I better go and tell Mark. And they didn't want me to. So I said, well, let me go and get my stuff at least. So I went and got my stuff and then told Mark. And I can't tell you what Mark said. I've got a recording of it, and it is it's one of my favorite things ever, because he really goes into bat for me. And I can't
share that with us when we start recording again, if that's all right.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. it's one of the funniest things I've ever recorded, you know, because he's on the mic, and you know, they say to him, you know, he's asking why they're kicking me out, and they explain why, and it escalates, and Mark, you know, because of where they come from, I think him and Dino and you know, the backroom staff, you know, they're used to having run-ins with clubs and with people. And, you know, when one person's being attacked, then they go into a defensive formation. Yeah. And Dino said afterwards he heard stuff was going on. He didn't know what it was, but he was coming down to, you know, to back us up. So Mark had it out with them and they backed down. I think the ultimate point that Mark made was that I am a named substitute. And if they tell a named substitute he has to leave when the referee's not sent him off or anything, then they could end up forfeiting the game. So they couldn't really argue with that. They let me back on the bench, but they said not to take a camera. So I didn't take a camera with me that time, and just got to enjoy watching the match from the bench with the players, which was good fun. Yeah.
What was their problem, though?
Like, I don't know. They, you know, no club has ever said to me, you can't film the bench. They were like, it's sacrosanct almost. And I was like, why? I've filmed benches in dozens of stadiums or grounds. And, you know, I did Dulwich Hamlet a bit after that, and they had no problems. And they've got a very small gap between the touchline and the fence. You know, yeah. I've got three cameras at that point. I had a camera on Mark, I had the Ronin, and I was filming the match. So I was doing three cameras that day, and nobody said a word. They were like, yeah, fine, just, you know, do what you need to do. You know, they just see the positive coverage. But, you know, the guys at Southend were all dressed in suits, taking it very seriously. And we're very much like, you're lucky that we're letting you be here, as opposed to a lot of the clubs who are like, oh, we really want you to come. So I just think it was an attitude thing, and I think it was probably to do with being a league club that didn't like being in the National League. That, that'd be my guess. But it's a shame, and we're going to see him next season as well. I don't know how that's going to go down.
You're looking forward to going back there next season.
I definitely think you should be named. Or what about Fitch? I got Fitch Ripping, your new name.
I think I got released last week. I'd have to get released. I'm a free agent now, so I should be looking for a new club, really.
Approach Southend and ask they'd like a bunch of amateurs made, because that would really put their backs out. It'd be quite funny to see the response.
Yeah, it would. Yeah, I'll ask for a trial.
So, are you, is it all sort of signed, sealed, delivered for next season with Dorking, or are you still sort of under negotiation with Mark, or, you know, how does that work? Is it just granted access straight away? Because obviously, at the top of the pinnacle of a non-league, and it's a great story that we've watched. What's the situation there?
Well, my first reaction was, is there a story to keep telling? And the answer is obviously yes, because as you say, they've just reached the top, and we want to see how they go from being at the top and one of the best teams in the league to being in amongst professional teams and the likes of Oldham, who, you know, looking at their stadium today, 17,000 seat stadium, whatever they've got, you know, compared to Dorking's
opening to Chesterfield, like,
yeah, Chesterfield, yeah. So yeah, there's definitely a story to be told. So then it's how can I make it happen when a bunch of amateurs doesn't earn a great deal of money, but it to do it properly, it needs to be full time. So how do I make that happen? And, you know, I chatted to Mark about that and we came up with an agreement to make that work. And then it's really, you know, do we have the ability to actually do it? Are we allowed to? So we've approached BT in the National League and they've not said no is the best way I could put that.
That's good.
So as far as I'm concerned, we're good to keep going. So there's nothing really standing in our way. In Chesterfield, for instance, they asked me for some footage for celebrating Old Acre signing for them. And I said to them, well, it's, you know, it's 200 quid per 5 minutes or whatever is this going rate for stuff like this, but I'll give it to you for free if you give us full access when Dorking come. And they're like, yeah, absolutely. So a bit of a contra deal there. So that's one away club we're definitely going to be doing. I'm really hoping that Woking and Aldershot say yes, because I live very close to those places. So
yeah,
that make my life nice and easy. So, you know, we've always got full access to all of the home games if we need them. We just need to pepper in some away trips as well. And then that'll really make it work. When I say we're still in negotiations, it's more about how many episodes are we going to do? When are we going to start putting the episodes out? Stuff like that. I want to make sure that I get, and you know, there's no debate. Like when me and Mark first spoke about it a month ago, it took about 2 minutes before we were shaking hands. Then it's just the minutiae of how that's going to work.
Yeah.
We both want it to happen. So we're both going to make it work. So, but this year it's much more about the players. I think I want to get into the players a lot more and show them at work. And
yeah, I was going to say that. Cause I would really like, you know, one of the things I love is that, and I'm sure you've watched it, you know, Peter Crouch did his like Saving Football about Dulwich Hamlet. And one thing I really loved, especially in the first couple of episodes, is he went to like the players' workplace to see what outside of work. And, you know, that's something I'd really love to know about like the non-league, because we look at, and I'm sure the majority of non-league players, you could think, right, we know they're part-time, majority of them. And, but you don't know anything really about them. You see them on a Saturday, walk into the ground. You might have a beer with them after, and then you go home and think, well, I'll see him next Saturday. But, you know, even still, I'm still discovering what some of the Worthing players, when I do the Rebel Yell podcast, or the Worthing podcast that I do, and I still find out when I'm interviewing the players there, what they actually do. I'm like, oh, bloody hell, I never really thought about that. Yeah, is that something you're looking at doing for the next season? Because I think that would go so well with what you do.
100%. One of my best mates, Speedy, said to me that he's been a staunch supporter since I first started doing this. And Speedy said, the bit I love most is at the end, during the interviews, you ask the players what they do, because you get such a range. And I'm going to try and run with that a bit, because you've got Matt Briggs, who's an engineer. God knows what he's on, but it's probably a six-figure salary. And Jordan Cheadle, who is in like high-level recruitment. So you've got these big earners doing completely different jobs. You've got Alfie Rutherford, and I said this to Alfie yesterday, I want to come and film you at work. And he's just looking at me like, why would you do that? And I was like, because you're a roofer. I think he works for Jason Pryor's dad, I think.
Interesting.
And so he's up ladders in the sun. And then on a Saturday, he's arguably the biggest hero at a football club. And I just think that contrast is fascinating. There's Luke Moore, who had to think long and hard about continuing this season because he's so busy, and like he's turning up dead on time because he can't get there a minute earlier, even though we'd love to, because he's got kids to look after, he's got jobs to look after. I want to show what these guys, and I think it's especially interesting with Dorking, because these are guys that are staying part-time while having to play in a full-time league effectively. So how are they going to go up north on a Tuesday night? Like, how are they going to make that happen?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting thing to see, because I know Mark's, I think he mentioned in one of the episodes that he might consider going full-time next season, but clearly that's not happened. And I think they're going to wait to see if they can cement themselves in that National League before they even look at doing that. You'd laugh, because if you ever came down to Worthing and interviewed some of the players there, about half the squad work for Darren Budd, who owns one of the biggest local removal firms in Worthing. And it is moving buddies, I think it is. And literally every player, don't they, guys? Every player works for him in some capacity or whatever, which is quite funny. But it's that sort of fascinating bit of non-league where it's funny you say he's a roofer for one of the other player or former players is dad. And I think that, as you say, that contrast, as you say, he's one of the heroes. I mean, he's a guy that it was inevitable, but he scored the winner to get them into the National League. And you think he's that, and then probably on the Monday morning after the thing's gone, he's up in some roof somewhere in Dorking area.
It's something that we need to explore, and I'm really excited about doing it. It's a challenge for me, because I did it once with a guy called Adam Lippitt from Charlwood, he's the guy, I don't know if you remember, who said, Bark said, are you hungover? And he said, I've only had a couple of bottles of wine.
Yeah. It's quite a famous sort of.
Yeah, that's one of our biggest.
Saying that, Rich, if I said that to my wife, she'd say that's not a hangover for you. So, you know, I don't know.
It's to his point.
Yeah.
But I went to Lippitt. He's an electrician, I think. And I filmed him at work and it went really well. So I've got to do that again. The players are, they're not shy, but they don't push themselves in front of the camera. You never see them come up to the camera and celebrate. They do it a little bit at the end of the playoff final. Apart from that, they just don't do it. So, but I think that makes it more interesting. I think if they were darlings of the camera, I don't think it would be quite as compelling. So the fact that we've got to push it a little bit, and I've got to figure out a way in. I've got to make it a bit less formal. I don't want to do like a three camera setup interview with them on the pitch. I want to do them walking around, and I don't want to do the cliche of a drive and talk, because every football documentary will have a player talking while driving to training. I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
But I want to shoot them at work and then get them to stand in the corner and to have a chat with me.
But you can think the irony of it's a clapped out second hand vehicle and the drive and talk compared to Premier League football. It'd be quite funny. Really.
There might be something in there.
Yeah, you know, there you go. Can I have some credit for that or something? A shout out if you ever do that. I expect it. A fellow Charlton fan gave me this idea. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. So next season, obviously, it's going to be fantastic, because as we know, it's gone from strength to strength. Can I ask him, I'm sorry if it's a little bit personal, is this your full time now? Are you full time doing this, or have you got work outside of a bunch of amateurs?
Yes and no. Once I built up all of the equipment that I've got, I realized that I can do videography stuff on the side, so do corporate videos and such. I'm a bit of a jack of all trades. I'm not an expert videographer. I'm not, when I go onto forums to ask questions, these guys know, I barely know a postage stamp compared to them. But I know enough about it so I can do, you know, some corporate work. Which I've been doing a fair bit of, as a couple of agencies I do stuff for, but I'm still a film reviewer, so I also do that as well. So I just do bits here and there to help pay for Dorking and bunch of amateurs in general. But hopefully with the deal that me and Mark have got planned, it will be 100% Dorking Uncovered. I'm hoping that we can do some stuff with Corinthian Casuals now that Barks has gone there as a coach. Because they're the ultimate amateur football team.
Yeah.
It really is a good match. And from what I've heard, they seem interested. So I've got to find time to do that. And I've got to talk to Mark about, you know, this is where it comes into, how many episodes are we going to do and how many matches am I going to film? Because I'm going to want the odd weekend here and there to catch up with Barks and see what we can do there, probably with a view to doing more with them next season.
Yeah. It's good.
Yeah, that's on my mind.
They're a good club, Corinthians. They're Worthing's bogey club, so I'm quite glad to be out of that league, because every bloody time we play them, they end up beating. And I hate going to that ground in Tolworth. It's a nice little non-league ground, but every time we go there, we end up, either it's Kingstonian or it's Corinthians, I know Kingstonian moving to Tooting, but like, seriously, like that ground, it just gives me nightmares, mate. The amount of times I've visited it and come away so disappointed. So hopefully you'll have more fun there than I ever have.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I do think that'll be a different story for us to tell, and but you know, we just got to figure out how we're going to do it at the moment. But as of August, the idea is that I don't have to do any other work, really.
That's good.
More that I don't need to. I've got a wedding coming up, so I'm going to imagine that Claire's going to want me to do as much work as I can fit in. It means that I can then spend a Monday going down to find Alfie on a...
That's brilliant. I mean, it's a testament of your hard work and dedication to show why it's good. And, you know, if it ends up producing salary for you, then, you know, fully deserved, mate, because it is a brilliant, brilliant TV show. What I was going to say before Gareth moves on to sort of final wrap it up, I was going to say, so I'm sure clubs must have approached you to do something. Has there been demand for you, and see if you can provide your services at other non-league clubs, or even from, like, you know, the streaming services, Netflix, or, you know, that might be quite grand, but has anyone sort of approached you to sort of make it, sort of take it to the next step, TV or anything like that, or another club, higher up?
We get 2 to 3 offers a week from clubs that want us to come and film. And they'll be all over the country, so they're completely impractical. Every club thinks they've got a story to tell, and they probably do. I just don't have the capacity to do it for them. I get approached by a lot of people who want to do what I'm doing and sort of copy it. And I'm always willing to tell them how I do it. And as soon as I tell them how much it costs to buy that many cameras, they disappear.
Let alone cameras, all those GoPro batteries as well, mate.
Yeah, I mean, it gets expensive. I was talking to Rail Bedford a little while ago. They want to do something.
Oh, the crypto lot.
Yeah, but if I'd done stuff for them, it would have been for them. I wouldn't have been able to keep the channel going. And I had a good long chat with the guy from there. We had a few meetings, but it became apparent to me that, you know, the best they could offer was that I could put it on my channel and their channel. That's just not going to work. So, they're going to want far more autonomy over the final edit as well. So, I was flirting with that idea just because I wasn't really sure what was going to happen next year, but Dorkin was always going to be my preference. There's a guy in Spain, who runs a club out in Spain, something Valencia maybe. I can't remember what they're called. Really lovely guy, George. And he's in a similar position to Mark in terms of how he runs his club. He wants to do something out there. But again, it's quite impractical at this point in my life to go out to Spain and start shooting for 6 months at a time, maybe in a year or two. So there's been other options. I'd love to see that. Yeah, I think it would be a fun one, but I think we've got to finish the Dorkin story and I've got to build up my team and my budget before I can go out and do something like that.
Yeah.
Ultimately, so it's just a little bit too early for me. But yeah, we get plenty of offers. And in terms of the big companies, no, never had a word. Barks got me to enter a Netflix competition last year, and we didn't get anywhere in that. BT are probably the most likely I could see us working with because they, you know, they cover the National League. But the conversation I had with them was fairly short. I'm open to ideas with them because I think we've got access to an audience that they would probably want to reach marketing wise. So I do think there's potential there. I'd love to do something with Netflix or Amazon or whatever, but I was talking to, I've actually got a good friend at Sky Sports who's a Dorkin fan. I didn't know he was a Dorkin fan. I spotted him during the edit. I was like, oh my God, it's Dave. So I got in touch with Dave and the question I had for him was, what's better long-term? Am I going to make more money out of selling to a big company, or is there more money in the long term if it's still my own thing and it's on social media? So he's got some really good ideas as to how to progress and expand. So I'm not a businessman, and I've got to use the people I know who understand how to expand, people like Mark, people like Dave, who can help me figure that side of it out. And so as beautiful as it would sound for Netflix to come in and give me an offer and buy it off me, if it kills the golden goose, then I'm not.
Then you could go out to Valencia and retire out there, mate, and do a little film out there anyway.
Yeah. Just keep one of my cameras.
Was it being Los Amateurs Bunchos or something like that?
just quickly before we go, we touched on it earlier. Last season, Holland Sports. Watching it from the start, there was a lot of sponsorship and everything pumped into them with regards to ProDirect and Adidas and all this sort of stuff. How did that end? I watched it kind of just came to sort of an abrupt end, and I didn't really understand what happened there. Did Barks and Mike just decide that they were not having it anymore? Or was it a business decision from you guys that you weren't getting the buy-in, so therefore it's going to finish?
No, it was the former. So ProDirect came to me as fans of the show. I think ProDirect were going to try and do something with Adidas. Adidas had some budget and they were thinking, oh, we could do our own non-league show. And then one of the guys at ProDirect said, oh, I watched this thing called Bunch of Amateurs. Why don't we do something with them? So they got in touch with me. And I, flukily from a Charlwood game, I had a GoPro shot. The GoPro is in the middle of the back of the goal and the ball goes in as it spins across. It stops dead center of frame on the Adidas logo. So we showed that to Adidas and apparently they went nuts for it. And they were like, we're in. They threw some money at us. And ProDirect said to me, look, we've got a few different stunts we want to do, a few different episodes we want to do. We'll be paying you, you know, X amount per episode. And I'm like, brilliant, finally earning some money from this thing.
Yeah.
We'd pretty much fulfilled ProDirect's requests. They got everything they wanted out of it. They got the TikToks and the episodes and they sent their photographer down and they did their thing. So they were pretty much sorted. And I said to them, it's probably in November or so, you know, things aren't going great there. I think the players are rejecting Barks's attempts to push them up a level, which is what the chairman brought him in to do.
Yeah.
So Westy, who's a lovely guy, Westy had said to me and Barks, and I put a lot of pressure on Barks actually, because I wanted a club for Pro Direct, and Barks was humming and hiring about Holland, and there was another option for him as well. And I was like, mate, we just got to choose a club and get on with this.
Yeah.
So I kind of forced his hand a little bit, which I kind of feel bad about. But, you know, Westy had this plan, and it, and the players, you know, someone said to me, it's a drinking club with a football problem. And, you know, those guys hang out down that, that clubhouse every night. There's, you know, they're a close knit clique of people, and, you know, Barks couldn't really break through that, and they needed to embrace, you know, his style and his planning and his formations, and they didn't. They didn't like it, so they wanted to go back to the way they were, flat 4-4-2, pumping the ball down the wings.
Watching from the outside, it very, looked very much like Barks and Mike had come in and were trying to get this real professional sort of outlet going, a group of players going, and the players, as you said, we're not having it. There were players getting sent off week in, week out. They just they just looked like they, from very early on, and I don't know how they managed to stick it out for so long, to be honest with you, because I could watch from very early on that that actually these players aren't buying into what he was trying to do, which is a shame. Yeah. You want to see players, you want to see teams move up the league, like they did, like Charlwood, for example.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of this season watching a team at Step 7 in the Southern Combinations. So, Charlwood, in the same league as Charlwood.
Right.
Missed the Charlwood game, unfortunately. But I see what clubs are trying to do at that level just to get people through the door, let alone...
Yeah.
Let alone... But
they had...
Leagues.
They had the beginnings of the infrastructure. You know, they had a good pitch. Well, the pitch isn't great, but they had a good location for the pitch.
Yeah.
Potential for floodlights, the clubhouse... They had what they needed to move on, and the chairman knew that, and he knew he needed someone to help push them on. And he was looking at a 3 or 4 year project, which I thought would be brilliant for all of us. But it would have taken a clear out of 80% of that squad.
Yeah.
And there would have been a revolt. And, you know, Barks stuck it out partly because I asked him to, and he felt compelled to, but there was a point, I can't give you specifics. I remember there being a point when I turned to Barks and said, mate, if you want to quit this, I would not blame you. Don't worry about it. I checked with Pro Direct, and they were like, yeah, we've got what we want. So I said, Barks, there's no pressure from me. I'll make it a story, whatever happens.
Yeah.
So he stuck it out as long as he could. And I think there was an incident where, I was fairly naive. Like I don't have an agenda in the edit or anything. There was no planning to make anyone look stupid. I try and actively avoid that because of the trust that they give me to film them and to put cameras all over the dressing room and that. So I try not to screw anybody over at all. Sometimes I've done it inadvertently and I've been apologetic about it. But for the most part, we've avoided it. And with those guys, I had no agenda against them. I mean, everything that you see is kind of what happened, but actually toned down quite a bit. There are things I could have put in there. I had reaction shots of certain players shaking their heads when he's given a team talk. And I thought if I put that in an episode, because we're running at the same time as the season, that's going to cause problems. So
yeah.
I kept that stuff out. But at that final episode that we did, I gave them some of the sarcastic comments that I give everyone else. And that did not go down well with them. They got very upset about that. And I just thought, you know, like we're just poking a little bit of fun. I wouldn't take it too seriously, but at least one player got very mortally offended at mocking of his shooting ability, which I think is hilarious. But, you know, we moved on and it didn't do me any harm to go and do more dorking. It kind of worked out for the best. But yeah, it was a real shame. And I don't think the players necessarily wanted him to go. They just wanted something else from Barks and Mike. And I think that was where it went wrong, because they had a secret meeting behind the scenes, and that did not go down well. As soon as Barks found that out, he just said, no, I'm done, and he quit. So I don't blame him at all.
No, doesn't sound like it. So, Rich, fascinating insight into the life of a bunch of amateurs tonight, and something we both can't wait to, all of us at the Premier Non-League podcast, can't wait to follow again next season. We have a habit of asking anyone that comes on the show their highlight of the 21-22 season. For you, let's just say, okay, you do a couple of clubs. For Dorking Wanderers, what was your highlight of the season? Forgetting the promotion, obviously, but what was your highlight?
I forget the playoff final because that's too obvious.
Yeah.
I think there's two. There's Mark going into bat for me at Southend was brilliant. And the other one would be Ed Harris doing a diving header at knee height. I almost cried. Like, it was such an emotional. It was the day that Alfie went in goal and they had to fight so hard to win that game.
Yeah.
And everybody was in. Everybody was all in. And Ed Harris, I'm not sure if he went on or he was already on, but he is the absolute god at repelling like late advances. And they were throwing everything. I can't remember which club it was. They're throwing everything at Dorking. And Ed Harris was getting on the end of all of it. And when he headed it clear and it bounced back towards him, he just stooped and he headed it. He was just like, oh, he doesn't care if he gets kicked in the face. This is the last minute. And I was watching that from the sides and I choked up. I was like, this is amazing. And the dressing room after that was so much fun. As Mark said, these are the games that you remember and you remember for a long time. I'll always remember that one.
And what do you think Dorking will do this season? Do you think they really, I mean, as what's the famous, you repeat that famous line that Mark said at the end of Bunch of Amateurs, the last episode about winning it. What was that called again? I forgot.
Well, he said to me privately, which I then put in the message at the very end, we're going to win the fucking thing.
Yep.
And
brilliant.
you know, he's gone from, he said to me, like, we've just got to survive. And then it was like, I fancy us to get mid-table. And then it's like, we're going to fucking win this thing. And I could see any of that happening realistically. I really can. And they won't go down because I know this from experience. I've been a Charlton fan. Do you remember when we first went down from the Premier League? We played Stoke fairly early on.
Yeah.
And I remember being furious that we couldn't beat Stoke. I think we lost 2-0 or 2-1 or something.
Yeah.
And my mate said to me, but Stoke are on the rise, mate. And that was the first time I realised that it doesn't matter where you were before.
Mm-hmm.
If a team is well organised and the club is well organised and pushing in the right direction, it doesn't matter the budget or the history, that team is going to beat a team that's sinking like a stone. And I think you could see that with Dorking next season. There'll be a few basket cases in that division that will stay below them. Obviously, there's advantages that those clubs have got about being full-time. But I think Dorking are going to surprise a lot of them. No one's been able to live with their style of play, even though, as Mark says, we put it out there for everyone to see and give the tactics away. No one's been able to figure out a way to stop it. And I think that spirit that they've got and that single-mindedness of it. I watched, sorry for going on, but this one, I really like this one. I watched them training last week and they were doing patterns of play, which I've not filmed before. And it was like, oh my God, this is what I see every week. This is exactly how they play side to side, wait till someone's out of position, push up the wing, put it in the box. And they're doing it over and over again. And I was like, that's exactly what they do all the time. I've talked about it in commentary. I've never seen them practicing the pattern of play and how meticulous he is about getting it right. And he made a comment about how those players are there to do the job of that pattern. He doesn't bring in a Neymar style player to add flair. He only brings someone in that can do that pattern of play. And he was busting the balls of the new boys because he's like, it's going to take you a few weeks before you get this drilled in. Our factory settings is this.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, like that. No one stopped that yet. So
yeah.
Do you know what? Just outside the playoffs, I think is totally realistic.
Yeah. And what about the Addicts? We might I should touch it because there's two of us on the field. Do you think we'll be in League One?
This is non-league. We're not forever. Interested in League.
Oh, I'm interested. Shut up. I always get enough free for like being a Charlton fan. So I think I've got someone on my side here.
I'd have to ask you that, mate, because I've done so much at Dorking.
Well, I've done so much at Worthing, mate, to be fair. So it's the same thing.
Since oh, there we go. Neither can answer that.
No, there we go. We'll leave it at that then, won't we? Rich, thank you so much for giving up your time today to come on this summer special. And please do give us a shout if you do come down to Worthing with your girlfriend, your fiance, I should say, and nearly wife, from what I understand. You're staying at a hotel. We'd love to meet up for a pint or two and just sort of chat non-league. And please do come on again later on in the season. We'll have a little catch-up, see how Bunch of Amateurs has been doing over the course of the 22-23 season, if that's good for you.
Top stuff. Count me in. Lovely to meet you both.
Brilliant, Rich. Thank you very much.
Hold on that silver play button. Thank you, Rich.
Cheers, guys.
After yourself. Thank you, mate.
See ya.
Are you PNLP?
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.